We,
Sonia,
and Janooni are a couple of pals studying science in undergrad. We are not professionals.
Though every episode is meticulously researched, mistakes do happen.
If you notice that anything,
and we mean anything,
we state is inaccurate, please let us know.
Your comments, suggestions, and queries are important in furthering our personal and audience's understanding of science.
Thanks for being a part of this discussion.
We appreciate you.
We really do.
Bop, bop. Beep-a-da-bop.
It's very sunny today. I'm excited to go on my run today.
Oh, that's good. Look at you being active.
Yeah. I got a Fitbit, so that's been fun and exciting.
Where's mine? I think mine's charging. Which one did you get?
I got the Inspire 2 one, just because I was going to get an Apple Watch, but I thought, like, I'm going to wait until, like, the end of this year to get an Apple Watch.
You know what we can do? I think, I don't know if it's for the same version, but the Fitbit 3, the one that I have, on the app, you could add friends who also have Fitbits. So you can do like, that's fun. Okay.
Do that.
We'll do company. That. Okay. That's cool. Anyways, let's get this started.
You get to see how many like hours a day I sleep. That's going to be embarrassing.
In bed for 14 hours a day. That's funny. Anyways, let's start this bad boy. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, guys, gals, and non-binary pals. How the hell are you? Today, another episode
of Beaker Bros, where we drink out of beakers.
Because we're bros. We're not here in person right now. We're doing it over Zoom, but like, clink. Wait, say it together. Like, you know, when you like dink the glasses?
Yeah, ready? One, two, three.
Clink. Clink. There you go. Clunk. Anyways, so today's episode is an interesting one, like many of them, like all of them. If you've been keeping up with our past episodes, a lot of them have been focused on instances where science has been misused by certain people and certain organizations to promote ulterior motives, so things that are not good and often promote social inequality and racism. So what we want to do for this episode is dive into that a little bit more and specifically focus on one of the most prominent examples of how science has been misused during the late 19th and then throughout most of the 20th century. So that is the eugenics movement.
Eugenics movement.
Where people were racist and tried to get away with it because they said it was science, but it really wasn't.
Yeah, and it's like the biggest part of it is that it's based on like natural selection and like Charles Darwin. So before we like jump into the whole eugenics movement and everything, maybe we should talk about like Charles Darwin and like what natural selection is.
Yeah. Okay. Really quick though, sorry. It wasn't necessarily based on Charles Darwin.
Well, they like manipulated it in a way.
Yeah. Just want to make that clear. But sorry.
So Charles Darwin, white old dude with a big beard.
Yep.
Kind of bald. Mm-hmm. But besides that, he was an English naturalist. What is a naturalist? An expert in the study of natural history. Okay. So basically he developed the whole idea of natural selection after like a big 5-year trip studying plants, animals, and fossils in South America and even on islands in the Pacific.
The Galapagos.
Yeah, so he's like known for like studying the finches and that on that island. Basically, that's how he developed his whole idea of natural selection. And then he wrote it in a book, his best-selling book. Recommend good read.
Yeah, it's called, just sorry to dive in real quick. It's called On the Origin of Species, published in 1859.
Find it at Chapters Indigo at your local bookstore.
Yeah.
Amazon. Oh yeah, Amazon. Mm-hmm. Because everything's closed. Anyways, back to natural selection. So basically, natural selection is the process where populations of living organisms adapt and change. So individuals in a population are naturally variable, which basically means that like every individual in a population is different. So, sorry, I'm losing my train of thought. Okay, yeah. So the variation or like the differences basically means that some individuals have traits that are better suited for the environment versus other individuals that basically give them some sort of advantage or more likely to survive and reproduce. So basically individual with adaptive traits. So traits that basically give them some sort of advantage or more likely to survive and reproduce. So because they're able to survive and reproduce, they're able to pass the adaptive traits that they have on like off onto their offspring. So over time, these adaptive traits become more common in the population. How hard was that to say? So basically this is the whole idea of natural selection and how like the adaptive traits, which are also known as favorable traits over time, are transmitted through generations. Which is really cool was that Darwin actually didn't, like, he didn't know like anything about genes and like genetics at the time or like even it existing. He did this whole, like, he just knew that traits were like able to be passed on, which was also, I just thought it was kind of cool. He was like, I can tell, but he didn't know the science, like the actual like genetics part of it. But if the whole process of natural selection was too confusing for you, I have a fun example.
Oh,
tree frogs. So trees.
Tree frogs. That's the example.
That's it, guys. That's the episode. So basically tree frogs are sometimes eaten by snakes and birds. Sonia thought this was funny.
As an isolated sentence, like, we have a research doc that we throw all of our ideas on just for behind the scenes info. And I saw that sentence in isolation and I just thought it was funny. Like, there's nothing funny about animals dying, but
anyway. It's natural selection.
It is. Just tree frogs, they're so innocent. Like, they do nothing wrong, but they're
just eaten. Hop.
Yeah, they just hop. That's so cute.
Just let the frog hop, man.
Let it be.
Anyways, so basically tree frogs, an example of them. So there are gray tree frogs and there are green tree frogs. So gray tree frogs are able to blend well in like the dark wooded areas on like tree bark. Tree frogs are able to blend well with like green vegetation found in marshes and swamps. So if you were to have a green tree frog on like tree bark, it's actually easier for predators to find them and basically be eaten. So compared to like a green tree frog on a green leaf. So areas that, like, if green tree frogs go to habitats where they're not able to blend well, so again, like where areas where there's predominantly like those tree barks, they're more likely to be eaten. So then they can't really live and can't have baby tree frogs and can't really pass on their traits. So there's not as many green tree frogs in those areas. So that's basically, this whole idea is just explains the distribution of like gray tree frogs and green tree frogs. Have I been saying tree bogs the whole time?
A couple of times you did, but I think I get the point.
Tree barks. Now that's a tongue twister. But yeah, it basically explains the whole distribution of the gray versus the green tree frogs on like different areas. So you may predominantly find green tree frogs in marshes and swamps, like I mentioned earlier, and then gray tree frogs in like forested areas with tree barks, just because like the green tree frogs can't live in those areas because they'll be eaten. And if you're eaten, then you can't have babies and then there's no more green tree frogs. That's the example.
Thank you for that example. That was actually, that was a good example.
Thank you.
I give it 12 out of 12.
12 out of 12 tree frogs.
But anyways, just to like summarize the main takeaway from that whole explanation that you gave, mm-hmm. is that basically what you said means that less favorable traits that restrict reproduction and survival within a population will not be expressed in an organism's genome. So over time, like, that organism will not be able to thrive and survive and reproduce because those favorable traits don't allow it to. However, yeah. ones that are more favorable will be expressed and increased in frequency over generations. So over time, that, like you were saying, that tree frog, what was the other color? Not the green one, the one that was more favorable. Oh, the green one was more favorable.
Well, they're both favorable in their own different environments. It's just like if green was to go in the gray area, it's deceased.
Okay. So I guess like if there's more green in an area, the green frogs would have the favorable color. So that will increase in frequency
in
a population. Okay. So that's what natural selection is. And again, this idea sort of came about during 1859, when after Charles Darwin published his groundbreaking book that really laid the foundation for what evolutionary biology is today. However, this idea that we just discussed, many theorists during the late 19th and early 20th century began extrapolating their own theories that were often malicious to sort of promote their own ulterior motives when trying to discuss what it means to create a superior race, if that makes sense. So specifically, using ideologies created by people known as social Darwinists, again, not necessarily Charles Darwin himself, but people who sort of misused his ideas to create their own theories about social inequality and stuff like that. Social Darwinists, specifically Herbert Spencer and William Graham Sumner, I believe his name's pronounced, used Charles Darwin's theory of natural selection, or rather misused his theory of natural selection, and combined it with ideas such as survival of the fittest and laissez-faire governance. So survival of the fittest, in its most simple terms, is a phenomenon where only the strongest organisms are able to reproduce. And laissez-faire refers to a style of governance that restricts its involvement in private enterprise. So altogether, that's sort of a convoluted definition, but altogether, social Darwinism became an idea that incorporated the ideas of survival of the fittest, laissez-faire governance, and sort of an erroneous, or rather like a misinterpretation of Charles Darwin's theory of natural selection. That's what the foundation, I guess, of social Darwinism is.
Yeah.
Does that sort of make sense?
No, that makes sense. It's like, it's, they basically misused what natural selection is, combined it with the survival of the fittest and the, what was the other one? The
laissez-faire governance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong with a horrible accent, but it's okay.
Laissez-faire.
I apologize. But anyways, so with these sort of three overarching concepts in mind, social Darwinists like Spencer and Sumner also believed ideas that like a person's right to own property or their morality and stuff like that were dictated by heritable traits. They're not. These are things that aren't inherited. They're beliefs that people learn.
It However, doesn't sound as bad, like, saying it now.
Yeah.
But, like, I know, like, once you kind of go into it, like, it will seem very disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Thank you for saying that. But, yeah, so they believe these sort of weird ideas that someone's right to own property is inherited through their traits. And, you know, morality. Like, people... Anyways, they believe that these traits were sort of dictated by their inheritance. I've said that so many times. But they also believe that, so social Darwinists also used ideas that were based on imperialist, colonialist, and racist ideologies to emphasize the superiority of like white culture or Anglo-Saxon culture and biological traits. So with these ideas in mind, it basically meant that they believed that helping the poor, any person of color, and those that are physically and mentally ill or have various disabilities, and anyone that they simply just deemed genetically inferior would hinder the human race. So anyone, pretty much anyone that wasn't white was a hindrance to what it means to be human.
God.
That's what social Darwinists like Spencer and Sumner and everyone else that fell under that category believed. To sum it all up again, I'm taking this really slowly, but I want to make sure I'm explaining it as well as I can. But to sum it up all together, using the ideas of a misinterpretation of natural selection, survival of the fittest, and laissez-faire governance, plus all of those racist colonialist ideologies that I already discussed before, social Darwinism and encompasses racist ideologies that support the need to create competition for resources and promotes inequality as a means of eliminating those that they deemed, quote, unfit to live.
Okay, yeah, they think inferior, that's already bad, but to the extent where they mention they are unfit to live, or they shouldn't live, that's like absolutely disgusting. It's one way to think, but like to just think of like a person's life is not worth living, they're both disgusting, but I'm just saying it's
that's like next level racism.
Yeah,
like it's not a matter of not even just like liking the cult or disliking the people, but whatever, it's like a true hatred that you're willing to,
like, you don't want them alive.
Yeah, but here's when it gets really disgusting. So from these ideas of social Darwinism, there was a British scholar by the name of Sir Francis Galton who popped up in, well, he was around for a little bit, but especially during the late 19th century again, he began building upon the ideas that social Darwinists believed, so by people like Spencer and Sumner, to promote what he called a, quote, new science known as eugenics. Eugenics, simply put, aimed to progress the human development by eradicating people that they deemed unfit to live.
Oh my God.
So since social Darwinists pretty much believe that morality and the right to own property and all those things that aren't heritable, since they believe that they were heritable, Galton argued that institutions such as like welfare, rehabilitation services, mental asylums specifically is one thing that he quoted, saying mental asylums contradicted, you know, what natural selection is, and because it enabled, quote, genetically inferior to reproduce and survive, it means that he believed that like those institutions were useless and not appropriate to have, and he believed that only the wealthy class should be allowed to thrive because he deemed them to be genetically superior.
I think disgusting is the best word to like just describe all of this. He's like basically saying that, yeah, if you need support because like you're disabled in a like way, or like you're not as rich as the other people, then like why are you alive? Or like you shouldn't be, like you're irrelevant, basically.
Yeah, it's a gross misinterpretation of what natural selection is.
Mm-hmm.
So because like you're deemed inferior, these places are allowing inferior people to thrive and survive, so we shouldn't have them because it goes against what it means to progress the human race.
But in a sense, like, you know how like the whole natural selection is like how we are able to adapt and everything? Aren't these institutions ways, means for, like, in quote unquote what he said, inferior people to adapt? Isn't that what natural selection is also, just finding ways to adapt?
I'm stuttering right now, but no, I totally agree. That's a good way to look at it. Yeah, it's providing resources for people to better themselves.
Yeah.
Simply what were you saying?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, it's providing resources for people to better themselves. If that's not human progress, I don't know what is. Anyways, so what's really startling for me to see, though, is, you know, we talk about these ideologies, you know, oftentimes they come from different places around the world. Like, it doesn't really seem to hit home that often, right? It doesn't seem like it personally affects us. It doesn't seem like whatever. But the startling thing is, it does. So, as a specific example, throughout the first half of the 20th century, right, these ideas of social Darwinism and eugenics specifically really started to gain popularity. So Galton's beliefs and everything, they really started popping up all over the world. As an example, the eugenics movement was actually super popular in the United States amongst wealthy elites, as well as was highly prevalent in its laws. One specific example was that 24 out of 50 U.S. states actually passed regulations that forced the sterilization of approximately 65,000 Americans because they were deemed genetically inferior, simply because they were immigrants, people of color, or had some sort of mental illness.
What the? Oh my God, that's actually like, I'm just trying to think, like, imagine us living during that time period.
We would be targeted.
Yeah. Like, that's just, like, unbelievable. I'm just trying to, like, actually imagine how these people probably felt, especially immigrants coming to, like, the U.S. or whatever, mm-hmm. hoping for, like, a better place and, like, maybe a better place for their children to start a family, get jobs and stuff, and having this, like, being a target just because they are who they are.
Yeah, and these eugenics ideas, principles, they were also prevalent around the world, like I said. So Canada.
Oh, my God.
Sweden, Brazil. Bunch of other countries. One more stark example of when the eugenics movement really took off was when one of the most notorious eugenicists, as well as dictator of Nazi Germany, Adolf Hitler, really took these ideas of social Darwinism, eugenics, as well as California's forced sterilization program. So going back to the US example that we were saying, Hitler took inspiration from it, specifically from California's program that deemed individuals that were deemed inferior to be feeble-minded, right? So he took inspiration from these type of programs and ideologies to orchestrate what eventually became the Holocaust.
I think before we kind of go on, trigger warning, we will be talking about the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing that up. But I feel like trigger warning for the entire thing.
Yeah, yeah, that, yeah, I think it'd be really important. But
anyway, so yeah, so in order to maintain what Hitler deemed to be the superior, quote unquote, human race, for what he called the Aryan race, Hitler deemed it necessary to eradicate anyone that he saw inferior. So using these racist mindsets that were adopted from social Darwinism and the eugenics movement, it directly contributed to the genocide of millions of Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, people that are deemed disabled, and so many more.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we talk about all of this stuff sort of happening in the past, but really there's so many examples of genocides and forms of ethnic cleansing that are currently happening today that have rooted evidence of, what am I trying to say, that have roots in the eugenics movement and social Darwinism.
No, definitely. Like, even the Muslim minority group, that, like, the genocide that's occurring right now in China too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not just there, but in Myanmar, in the Yazidi genocide, it's just ongoing. It's a matter of people thinking that they have some sort of genetic superiority, or their beliefs are invalid or anything like that, and because of that they deserve to die.
That's, it's not even like a genetic superiority, it's more like their traits or beliefs or something are not as superior as the individual.
Yeah,
or
totally. Yeah, so this was sort of a heavy topic again, for what a lot of our episodes have been being lately, but it's super important to just keep reiterating the fact that even though science is super important for the human progress and development, there are many instances in history where people have tried to abuse this knowledge and understanding for their own ulterior motives. Yeah. And with this example specifically, like we sort of mentioned at the beginning of the episode, Charles Darwin was actually a man who passionately opposed social injustice throughout all of his life, throughout his career, throughout everything. So it's really such a shame that his name is affiliated with these ideologies and movements that eventually supported and became the definition of why people supported forced sterilization, ethnic cleansing, genocide, and stuff like that.
It's like everything he's against
became disgusting.
Yeah,
you know, it became something that people believed in.
No, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but this is also another example of why I guess science communication is so important, where to limit the people who misinterpret ideas like this, it's important to make science understandable and accessible so they don't get misused and misinterpreted to disgusting things like this.
I agree.
Thank you, Janooni. I'm glad you do. Anyways, that ends today's episode. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening.
Adios.
Yeah, check us back here next week. Bye-bye.